take some more questions.
Okay.
Right, so I think the first question is, yeah.
Thanks very much for both those talks. I was really, felt really invigorated by Stephen Jeffries saying things that I've felt, you know, the inspiration that I've taken from Andrew Dawkins. But I'm very disturbed when I was an actor, I thought, oh no, you know, she can't contain this at American conference. But in fact, I was really struck hearing you both talk that you both hate the same things, and Andrew Dawkins hated those things. We all hate them together. And the question is, you know, what are the, you know, how do we sort of frame the enemy, and how do we then destroy it? And it felt to me as though, you know, Alison Apatow's, you know, isn't angry enough about the way that women are coerced in the West. You know, I have two teenage daughters. My 14-year-old spends an hour cleaning before she goes to school every day. You know, I love her. I don't want her to feel a fool when she does that. But what do? You know, this is coerced. You should be more worried about that. Then on the other hand, I felt, you know, Tilly Jeffries should maybe be a bit worried, and maybe Andrea Gordon should have been as well. That diagram of the woman, it was so violent, so aggressive. And, you know, ordinary women who feel their breasts are too big because it's uncomfortable, or feel their labia are uncomfortable, or whatever, because they should also be, we should be concerned about them. And the line that I think Andrea Gordon gives us about this, I can't remember where it was, this paper on an article on Hedda Nussbaum, and the phrase she uses is she says, she's talking, you know, Hedda Nussbaum got done for failing to care for her baby when she was battered. And Andrew Dawkins is saying, yes, we're very worried about the baby, we're worried enough to send Hedda Nussbaum down, but who loved the woman that the baby was going to become? You know, who loved Hedda Nussbaum? Women aren't loved enough. So I guess it's like you both to say this about the more loving of women.
Okay, there's a question at the back, and then we'll take these two.
Yes, I feel that I have to speak up to the children of Rochdale. It was a comment that Alison Apatow made, which I think was deeply offensive. It was wrong, and it was outrageous. To suggest that another failed child protection incident meant that the people who abused those children simply were not convicted of it. You know, and someone who sat through rape cases time and time again, and any of us who do work on sexual violence will know, that if you rape or abuse an under 5-year-old, you pretty much are guaranteed to get away with it. And if you rape a woman per se, you have got a very, very good chance of getting away with it. Okay, so please don't make statements like the adults at Rochdale, it was discovered that they hadn't abused these children after all, somebody was lying. Children aren't believed, and women are often not believed. And unless, for example, with rape, you think that 94% of women who make a complaint about rape are lying, we actually have a 6% conviction rate, then we're in a very sad situation. And I also don't think that Sheila and Alison do hate the same thing. I think you hate radical feminism, and you hate feminists who point out that men are destructive and sexually abusive to rather a large extent. I really honestly don't think that Alison hates pornography or violence towards women at all, unless I've misheard what you said.
Do you think it would be possible? I don't think I insulted anyone. Do you think it would be possible, if you don't mind me saying this, that, you know, one person accused me of being confused, and you've said that I don't hate violence against women. I find that, I'm afraid, it's just like the sort of things I was accused of in the 80s, because I wrote a book which was called Bad Girls, Dirty Pictures. I was accused of not accepting that there is violence against women. I was accused of sleeping with the enemy, and I was accused of not deserving the title of feminist many, many, many times. And I'm afraid the tone of the two contributions where you say, one said you were deeply confused. Maybe I am. I accept I'm deeply confused, but perhaps we're all deeply confused in the end. And the other one at the back, who says, I cannot be against violence against women. Of course I'm against violence against women.
Excuse me, I didn't say you couldn't be against it. I said that you have said nothing which would lead any of us to believe that you hate violence against women as much as you hate the radical
I don't hate that radical feminism, really.
And quite frankly, I think you can't get away with making a statement like, these adults were found not to have abused these children in Rochdale, when you can look at what the conviction rate is for those people who rape under five-year-olds. It's outrageous what you said. You cannot possibly qualify it. And therefore, I think you should leave it out of your talk.
Okay, so we've got two questions actually over here. I will take this one first and then...
Piling on a little bit. I do have a question. I feel as if I'm in a sort of Orwellian world when I hear you speak. Where things mean the opposite, or things are asserted to mean the opposite of what I understand them to mean. There is, for example, I'm hearing some of the lines that I've heard over and over again during the controversies over pornography in the 80s. One of them, for example, seemed to be the facile assertion that pornography is somehow connected causally with rape was argued not to be true and not proven, rather. But on the other hand, the assertion that opposing pornography led immediately to censorship passed easily without being in any sense proven. There was no scientific proof of that, not required. I began to wonder what the word alliance meant when I heard that Andrew Dworkin or whoever plug in the appropriate target was allied with the far right. Where was the proof or the understanding of just what alliance meant if you happen to be standing on the same spot at the same time, which is very common in politics? With respect to the behavior of the police and the treatment of by police, I thought it might be useful if you had not done so that you would read Sheila Jeffries' book, The Spinster and Her Enemies, for a very informative discussion of the Contagious Diseases Act and the all too typical behavior of the use of that act as a as an excuse for police to maltreat women. And finally, I would just say that pissing in the same spot, same pot, excuse me, is obviously a paraphrase of male attitude based on what men say and what men write and what men think. When I look at Joan Smith's work for a reminder of that, it seems odd to misunderstand or misread a paraphrase for the attitude of the person who is paraphrasing someone else's proven to be.
Shall I respond? Or? Okay. When I said alliance, and this was in the, as you are well aware, of course, this was in the 1980s, movements, the radical feminists and the Christian right were taking the same line. Now, I mean, okay, the alliance, the word alliance is being used loosely, if you like. But I think we often use the word alliance when two groups of people who are otherwise opposed. I mean, Sheila Jeffries and I happen to be allied in our view on Judith Butler. We happen to be allied on our view on postmodernism. And that doesn't mean we're directly working to counter postmodernism, but we happen to share the same view. That's the sense in which I was using the word alliance.
Likely intended, maybe, Alison.
Yeah. No, you don't like it, Sheila, but I don't like being allied with right-wing pornographers, either. I don't like it.
Excuse me, but why conflate them? Why walk your way to conflate them? Why not?
Well, can I just say, can I just finish? Because, please, just let me finish the response, if you don't mind. Because you made a point that the language, and Sheila made the point as well, that what Andrea Dworkin is talking about is not, she's not, if you like, expressing her own view in... calling a chapter dirt. She's talking about the patriarchal view, the way that women are represented. Now, absolutely, I don't for a minute deny that. But all I'm saying, and this is exactly, you're saying that what I'm saying plays into the hands of pornographers. Okay, you may be right. But I think there is something which is equally frightening and worrying, which is very current today, and that is Christian fundamentalism and Islamic fundamentalism. And I think that the sort of quotes that are used, I'm glad that somebody nodding, one person in the audience is nodding, which gives me a little bit of reassurance. It makes me think that I'm not completely insane. Just, you know, maybe I am insane. I certainly felt it in the 80s. But anyway, the sort of language that's used, the choice of metaphors, the choice of cultural icons, the way those cultural icons are described, is the same language as the language used by the Christian right in the US and by Islamic fundamentalists. It's a language that denigrates women as sex beings, and it represents women, and it by implication, it depicts women who are good, strong, active feminist women as being, by implication, I'm not saying for a minute that Andrew Dworkin or Sheila or anybody is actually does not have a sex life. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the image that is presented, you'll be glad to know that. I'm saying the image that is presented almost makes out the image, the sort of cultural icons, the way those cultural icons are described. It's almost as though, in order to be a feminist hero, you have to depict yourself as sexless. That's all I'm saying, and that's exactly what the Islamic fundamentalists do. It's exactly what they do. They say women cannot be in public sexed beings, because women are dangerous. Women as sex beings are dangerous people. You cannot show that you are... you cannot show a bit of hair, because if you do, you'll stir up some man to go and rape some woman somewhere. Just showing a little bit of hair. I'm simply saying that it's a similar language, it plays into the hands of that.
So it's women who cause...
Sorry,
we've got a bit of a queue happening here, so if you... I'd
like to hear from both Sheila and Alison what we can do about the future. So I'd like you both to comment on where you think, obviously individually, because you're very different people, what's feeding the energy that makes things the way they are for women still the way they are for women? Why, when so much has been written, so much understood about equality and the benefits of all sorts of good behavior, what's the driver for the continuing discrimination, prejudice, and violence against women in our society?
Yes, I think one of the things that's happening, and what lies behind the practices I was talking about earlier, is that we're in a stage in which the culture is being pornographized as a result of the fact that as a result of the work of Alison and others, pornography was decensored, normalized, and allowed to become an enormously powerful industry from the 1970s onwards. The effect of this industry is now everybody's pension schemes are actually wound up in it. We're all going to live off the earnings of prostitution. General Motors is in pornography now, right? So we're all living, and will live in our older years, off the earnings of prostitution. The prostitution of poor women, marginalised women, the most vulnerable women, and the terrible violence done to their bodies in pornography and prostitution. We will live off that. Now, that's the world in which we live. In the last 25 years, pornography has spread out as it's become normalised to be what the entertainment industry is. There's little difference now between porn models who are open gigs and are in the porn videos. They are also the fashion models. The pornography creates the styles that women are supposed to wear. That's why they have to show all of their body and wear slut pumps, the shoes, the pointed. They're slut pumps. So all of those practices come very much from pornography, as does labiaplasty, as does Brazilian waxing, as does breast implants, and so on and so on. Now, why is all of that happening? Yes, of course, it's a huge market sector, but I think also it's happening because it's the compensation to feminism, right? Yes, women have some more opportunities now. There are many things that women are able to do now, and I would not deny it, than when I was young, and I could only think of being a teacher or possibly a civil servant. Women can do all kinds of things, not in huge numbers and not as we would like. But as a result of that, I think men are being offered, and quite understandably really, by male-dominated governments all over the world, the huge compensation of the pornography and prostitution industry, which allows men to have a subordinate class of marginalised and poor women on whom to act out their rage and create their dominance. So I think that's a huge part of what's going on.
Okay, Charlie. Shall I respond, or do you want to have some more questions?
I'd love to hear you.
Let me just tell you about one of my students. One of my students recently did a project on women in the UK, on women erotic dancers, and she interviewed a lot of them, and all of them, she said, all of them said they feel powerful when they're doing erotic dancing. They feel... Please let me finish. You're laughing, but this is what they said. They feel powerful when they do erotic dancing. This is what they all said. Now, I just want to contrast that, because I personally think that the fundamental problem, the big problem in the world today, I'm afraid, is fundamentalist religion. That's what I think is the big problem in the world today. And I think it's very, very serious. And the kinds of human rights abuses that are actually carried out in the name of fundamentalist religion, I think I don't for a minute, please let me say this again and again, I don't think that violence against women in the home is right. I think it's horrific. I think that the numbers of women who've been destroyed, but also made, because they've managed to overcome it. You know, I'm actually trained to be a counsellor. One of my clients is somebody who overcame horrific abuse, and she's going to be the most wonderful woman because she overcame it. And, you know, many women have. I don't want to denigrate that. But I think the sort of abuse that can cause you to be stoned and executed, you can be married in Iran at age 9 if you're a girl. You can be stoned by, and there's debates about the size of the stone. This is really serious stuff. Debates about the size of the stone that is used against women for simply doing things like walking in the streets, wearing colourful clothing, or walking on the wrong pavement. And, you know, if the stone is too small, it'll just hurt the woman. If it's too big, it'll kill her too quickly. This, it seems to me, and this Sharia law is coming into existence in Iraq at the moment. It's a combination. If you read the Iraqi constitution, there's a combination of Sharia law and some woolly-minded liberal democratic constitution. This, to my mind, is the fundamental problem facing women today. And I would want to devote all my energies, as far as I can, to working with the Iranian resistance, because I think they're the hope for Iran at the moment, and not bombing Iran, which US and the UK could easily do, and for helping women worldwide. That's my answer.
Okay. There was a question at the very back, which is next in the queue. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's just a case of which side are you on? And right at the beginning, you said that you were proud to ally yourself to different pornographers, but you said that quite clearly. Well, you said during the 80s, I was proud to be on the side of the pornographers.
I didn't say that.
Oh, well, maybe
I didn't say that, I really didn't.
That, but that is what I got from your speech at the beginning, when you were talking about where you positioned in the 80s. And so, yeah, I just think, why defend that industry? You know, there are many spaces.
Sorry, I think there are many, many sides. Let me just say this. I don't think that all women form a class. Radical feminists talked about sex class. I don't think they do. I think the problems faced by the women I've just been talking about, which you didn't mention, are far, far more extreme than the problems faced by any woman in the West. Any woman. Okay. I just wanted to respond.
We're just going to start taking questions two at a time because there's quite a few of them remaining. I think next in the queue there was one from you. So, can you start?
So my question is for Sheila Jeffries. I really enjoyed your paper. It was very fluent. It was funny. And I think it was very thoughtful. And you presented a very persuasive case that we have a more exacting regime with gender now. One of the things I liked about your paper is the way you have a very strong sensitivity to the unequal playing field that women are still operating. And I think it's that sensitivity to the politics of gender in our society that's perhaps lacking in our other speakers today. But what I want to ask you is, do you think there's any cross-link with the third wave of feminism? You know, the second wave of feminism was made up in both the social movement and women theorising. And we still have women theorizing, but we don't seem to have the social movement anymore. So is there any prospect of a third wave of feminism?
If you just go through your hands
back hand. Yeah. Oh, okay. What I can see is that feminism at the moment is faced with fixing the problem. So there's the problem of fundamentalism in Iran, and we've got the continuing problem in our society of why aren't things improving as much for women as quickly as we thought they would. And so we have two different responses, one from Professor Atkinson and one from Professor Jeffries, which says we should look at this and we should do it in this way, and another one which says we should look at these problems in, say, UK society instead of like Iran, and just think quickly and respond in this way. And I think that I find them both to be valid responses, and the problem seems to come from the fact that Professor Jeffrey's response could possibly be abused by fundamentalists, and so that seems to be why you're arguing against it, rather than the fact that the arguments within it are valid and are important and things we should look at and quite convincing in our society. So, and my question is just wondering, really, I think what you said was the fundamental problem and where we should put our energy. So how, I think we ought to have we should have energy put into trying to cope with both of these issues, the problems in the UK society, the fact that we can still continue women's bodies, still forced into these constricting things. And how are we going to find a way for those two things to be done, and the energy which is put into them, instead of fighting against each other, to work constructively with and support each other? So I don't think there's a really strong disagreement in aim.
So you can respond to either question if you like.
I think you have to make your own choice. You choose where you want to go. Nobody's there. Nobody's going to tell you. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. And there was.
Oh,
yeah, of course.
Shall I say about the third wave? Yes, I hope that it will come. I know lots of marvellous young women, and they are getting more numerous, who are interested in this, who are actually collecting the history of the early movement, getting interested in those ideas, doing their PhDs on that stuff, interestingly enough. So something's going on. There is a revival of interest. You know, the BBC and Channel 4 are making programmes about this stuff. I mean, extraordinary. So I think there is hope, but it's very, very difficult for young women. They don't have any of the things we took for granted. There are no women's bookstores or women's spaces or women's centres. All of that is gone, and they're on their own, and it's really, 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 really hard. But yes, I have hopefulness, and I think if that revolution comes again, it's going to be about what they have to do sexually, what they have to do to their bodies. It's going to come from the personal again, and from the agony of what they're now being expected to do sexually. Can I just say something about fundamentalism? It is important that in Iran, and this is a connection that I have with Alison here, because we're making connections today, in Iran, transgenderism is totally approved. It's enforced by the state. Huge numbers of men are having transgender surgery, and they're getting it on the state because homosexuals are executed. So what I think is very fascinating is that there's a connection between the very jolly Blair government and their Gender Recognition Act and Iran. They love transgenderism because it does help to get rid of this serious problem of homosexuality, and it enforces gender, right? So we do need to be fighting, I think, transgenderism as a state project in terms of gender.
There's a question right here.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's more of a statement to start off to say, I mean, from the First Session, I think it's brilliant that we're having a day to commemorate and just working in the work of the New York Talking and the impact that India has on women and men, both in the academic world but also the new world, some would say, as well, out there. And I think it's fantastic that we've got the speakers that we have, that especially to hear Sheila speaking, and to use the same clear, powerful language and to equip us with those words to challenge what they're doing. And I think in this day where we do have that, you know, is it feminist to support this, the gender realignment and what's going on? And I think we need the kind of writings to help us formulate our arguments about what it is that is anti-feminist and anti-women about the way we're going. And I think it's useful to have these arguments about just the use of gender and sex and sexuals and to keep that, because like you're saying, it has you know, we don't have women's studies, we have gender studies, because everybody can come along and everybody, you know.
And you don't need to have women in them.
You don't need that. And more we don't. And women's voices, we're in the academy, and we're now getting pushed out again. We can't have feminists, we can have gender studies. So I think it's really important that we have that, you know, we have the language, we have the knowledge, and also, I mean, yeah, I mean, I suppose that, I mean, just to say, you know, I think it's really important that we do it. And not, yeah, sorry, just to say, we need the structural analysis. It's not enough to just say that, well, one woman may make money being a lap dancer. Structurally, we know, and we know that the links between all forms of violence against women are there. It's about the abuse of children, it's about the abuse of women, it's about pornography, it's about, you know, the sexual, physical violence against plenty of women and children. And that's why we need this gender structural analysis, and analysis that Andrea and Sheila and others help us to understand what's going on.
And we have a question up here?
Yeah, this is my statement too. In connection with what Allison Ather said, I'd like to straighten out one distortion, one factual misrepresentation, and one decontextualization. The distortion, the connection between pornography and rape is not proven. That is a vast distortion of a huge body of social science research that's gone on for 30 years. Reasonably well put together up to the date at which it was published in Catherine Pinson's book. And it shows, it documents without any question the connection between extraordinary pornography and the effects on people who use it in terms of, among other things, their pro-rape attitudes, which are correlated with behavior, but also with many broader and other effects. As to the factual misrepresentation, Andrea Dworkin was never allied with the far right, and indeed the Christian right never supported the McKinnon-Dworkin ordinance. Not any time and not anywhere. And the in both connections of these two things, these are two items that were reports that were created by a PR firm that was hired and funded by the pornographers to flood the press with these two lies so that you would all think these two things. The reason the Christian right didn't support the McKinnon-Dworkin ordinance is because it's a sex equality law. And that is why the fundamentalists, the Islamic fundamentalists, don't support it either. And as to the decontextualization, the quote by Robin Morgan about censorship legislation likely to be used against women was a statement about obscenity law. It was not, as was implied here, suggested here, in relation to the work that Andrea Dworkin did against pornography included in the legislation that she received.
I don't know what it's worth really. I mean, I would like to say, I suppose, just on the comment that as far as the vast body of experiments, literature on the purported causal connection between pornography and rape, that literature is heavily contested, and there are many people on both sides who say it is not clear what the evidence actually shows. It's contested. It basically is contested. It is contested research. I suppose that's all I would say. And on the point of factual inaccuracy, I'm sure you're in a better position than I am, obviously, to know what the actual position was there. But I'm only quoting what has been reported many, many, many times. In articles, in press reports, and so on, about the Christian right actually supporting the ordinance. This is what has been reported many, many, many times. Now, I know that what is reported is often a distortion of the truth. I know that, and I'm not going to claim that I have more access to the truth than somebody who was there and part of it. How could I claim that? But all I would say is that this has been reported many, many times, and I'm simply reporting what I've read from many, many sources.
Okay, well, I think we're going to have to end it there in terms of questions because we've run out of time.
Say, actually, but if you've been told that it's not right, will you continue to say it?
You don't have to respond to that because we're done with it. But if you want to continue the conversation over lunch, that's great. And could we all thank our speakers for...